Hey, Points North listeners, Ellie Katz here with some very big news. We just launched the Points North Fan Club. You already love listening to this show about the Great Lakes, and we love making it, but now you can help support it too. So here's the deal. For $5 a month, you can help us continue to tell these stories about this region we all love. And we've got a little something for you in return. A Points North beanie. Yes, that is right. So in between your trips to the sauna this time of year, or sauna, don't come for me, you can properly rep your favorite podcast. Plus, we'll throw in a bumper sticker and some other fun stuff. Join the team at pointsnorthpodcast.org/fanclub. That's pointsnorthpodcast.org/fanclub. And please tell all your friends.
Quick note, if you have young ears around, this is an intense episode with a couple swear words.
I think it would be an absolute tragedy if our families stopped going up to the Boundary Waters and that experience with nature and camping in the outdoors. I don't want to live in fear and don't want anyone else to live in fear. And I think that with this situation, it was an accident and it was nature. And so I don't have any resentments towards nature, or I'm not bitter towards anything really. I just want to overcome it.
This is Points North, a podcast about the land, water, and inhabitants of the Great Lakes. I'm Dan Wanshura. This is a story about a man falling in love with the place and how that place changes forever after an accident. In northern Minnesota, there's this area of remote wilderness. It's more than 1 million acres and stretches along the Canadian border. This is the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness.
Basically, you're on your own, and the only thing that can break down is you.
Eric Grams was 12 when he first went on a trip here. He was with his dad and two uncles.
It wasn't an immediate love because I remember crying through probably my second or third portage, wondering when we're going to make it to the lake and do some fishing.
Thick boreal forest is divided up by streams and rivers and over 1,000 glacial lakes.
I just remember just how rugged the terrain was and kind of an incredible experience for someone who's never been off into the woods that far.
Eventually, they made it to their campsite. It's right next to a lake.
And basically, my uncles ordered me to dig a trench around the tent so that way if it rains heavy, it'll capture the water before it rushes under your tent. And I think they gave me that task just to keep me busy.
After Eric dug the trench, he got to fishing. Right away, his bobber went down, and he landed a 10-pound northern pike.
If you've ever caught a northern pike, they fight really well, and 10 pounds is right around that 30-inch, 32-inch mark. And so for a 12-year-old, it was pretty amazing.
The rest of the trip, Eric just remembers catching so many fish.
I have a picture of us four with a log, and we're holding it up on our shoulders, and across it is our northern pike strung up on it. And, you know, incredible first experience when you catch that many fish.
The fish weren't the only ones hooked that trip. Eric got hooked on the Boundary Waters, and he's been coming back ever since.
I really feel when I'm in the Boundary Waters that I'm in my element. I get to get a whole different perspective again. And when I come back, I don't take everything for granted. And you really enjoy the comfortable seat in your truck or enjoy driving 30 miles per hour with just the push of your foot. You know, enjoy a McDonald's burger again. You kind of appreciate the things you went up there to get away from.
Last May, Eric, his younger brother Reese, and some friends head to the Boundary Waters for a guy's fishing trip. Their destination is Curtin Falls, a 30-foot waterfall right on the Minnesota-Canada border. It's Eric's favorite spot up there. It's where he proposed to his wife. The guys load up their gear and then all pile into a truck for the 4.5-hour drive north. It's on these drives that any stress Eric is dealing with from work or whatever fades away.
Because I'm heading into my favorite place in the world and I know I'm very prepared and I've done it for over 30 years.
But this trip is different.
There was a different feeling of anxiety, which for some reason I just couldn't shake.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you can like put words to that anxiety.
The anxiety felt like there's something looming that you have to do and you don't want to do it, and you feel like you are on a path that you can't change, or you're trapped in a situation. I just couldn't shake it.
It's day two of the camping trip. After about 20 miles of canoeing and portaging, the guys make it to the Curtin Falls area. Eric says the weather is beautiful, partly cloudy in the 60s.
We had our lunch, and then Reese and I rushed into our canoe and threw our fishing gear and took off first to go fishing.
Eric, Reese, and two of the other guys, Kyle Sellers and Jesse Haugen, fished the lake above the waterfall.
Reese and I were getting into a lot of the 24-inch walleyes, and there was a couple of moments where we each had a 24-inch walleye on at the same time.
But fishing in a lake that feeds into a waterfall can be risky.
The danger is if you're caught up or distracted by the fishing, you can lose track of where you're at relative to the falls.
Eric isn't too worried, though. He's fished this spot with Reese and Jesse before.
On a typical day, the area around the falls is a bay, and it holds the water in there pretty well, where it's not a current that's pulling you towards the falls until you get to the point where you're way too close and there's a point of no return.
After an hour and a half of fishing, the guys take a quick shore break, then head out one more time.
We fished for another 15, 20 minutes or so, and then we decided, you know what? We've got everything we need for dinner, and we could start heading back towards camp now. Let's give it one more minute. And it wasn't more than 20 seconds later that we realized that Kyle and Jesse were parallel to the falls. They had gotten really close to the edge.
Kyle and Jesse are both distracted tying their fishing lines at the same time, and their canoe drifts right to the edge of the waterfall.
They attempted to paddle out of the area and ended up tipping their canoe.
As the canoe tips, Kyle Sellers gets washed over Curtin Falls.
And I'll never forget that moment, because that's when the horror and absolute disbelief and shock kicks in immediately.
But the other guy, Jesse Haugen, doesn't go over. Somehow he's able to plant his feet on some rocks and brace himself in chest-high water just before the waterfall. And he's reaching out his hand for Eric and Reese to help him.
When we saw Jesse in the circumstance he was in, deep down inside, I just knew that there was no good way to save him.
But that doesn't stop the brothers from trying. They're about 50 feet away.
With the front of the canoe facing Jesse, and I'm able to do some miniature backstrokes to just kind of slow our speed and make sure we're really creeping in very slowly and not getting past the point of no return. And as we get there really close, we're only a couple feet away from Jesse. The front of our canoe is just past his outstretched arm. And that's the point where Reese tells him, hey, you got to swim for us now.
Jesse lunges forward and grabs the canoe.
And then instantaneously, as soon as he made contact with us, you could immediately feel the pull. And we were just immediately started getting pulled over. there wasn't any going back from there.
Eric says he remembers every part of the whole trip, except for what happens next. The moment he actually goes over the 30-foot waterfall.
The next memory I have is I'm 10 feet under the water, and I can look up and see the daylight still. And while I was under the water, I was already thinking that these guys aren't going to make it, and already grieving for the loss under the water, and already devastated before I reached the surface.
When he makes it to the surface, Eric sees Jesse pop up next to him and get a gasp of air. Then they both get pulled under again.
The second time I was submerged was the most difficult because I wasn't expecting to get pulled under instantly after swimming to the surface. It just felt like I was getting shot through a water park tunnel.
Eric is getting rocketed through a long section of rapids after the waterfall.
You know, the thought crossed my mind that I might not make it.
But he fights his way to the surface again, takes another quick breath of air, and then gets pulled under for a third time.
I just kind of reacted and did the best I could without panicking and just kind of went where the water took me, but at the same time was fighting to get to the surface.
This time, Eric is able to pull himself onto the Canadian shoreline. His shoes have been sucked off his feet, and his hip is badly injured.
The first words out of my mouth when I got on land was just screaming no, as loud as I could. No, you know, and then what the fuck were you guys doing? You know, what the fuck? No. I was angry initially at Kyle and Jesse because I just don't understand how it happened. I was angry that Jesse was able to stand on that submerged rock and keep himself in that position. And I'm upset at myself because I'm in charge of the group, I'm the leader.
Eric begins yelling for Jesse, Kyle, and his younger brother, Reese.
Just kept yelling and yelling and traversing that shoreline, and the anger starts to fade. And then it's trying to find anything, any sign of these guys.
But there are no signs.
It was such a shock and so hard to believe. And I just felt like this doesn't happen to me. This doesn't happen to us.
Eric continues yelling. And then he gets a response. Someone is yelling back from a small island between two sections of rapids, but Eric can't make out who it is.
I was just hoping it was my brother. Don't want to lose anyone, but, you know, I was selfishly hoping that it was Reese that we'd find.
It's not Reese, though. It's his friend Kyle, the guy who went over Curtain Falls first.
Kyle was pretty severely injured. He was shaking violently, and so I was asking him what's wrong, and he just said, I'm in shock. He had a long, treacherous swim himself and went through a similar experience to me. And his body went through so many rocks and through the tumble, and he was in the water longer than I was. And
a couple other campers find Eric and Kyle, and they contact emergency services with a satellite device. Hours later, a rescue helicopter comes and takes Kyle up first. He's borderline hypothermic and has a broken leg. Then the helicopter comes back for Eric. His pelvis is fractured in three places.
You know, I didn't want to leave the Boundary Waters or leave my brother and Jesse, but I knew there wasn't anything I could do anymore once I really got a sense of my injury.
An entire week goes by. That's around the time Eric's busted up canoe is found. But still, no sign of Reese or Jesse.
I didn't want to diminish anyone's hope for a miracle, because you always want to hope for that. But, you know, at the same time, I knew when I was in the water that this was really bad and most likely, you know, these guys didn't make it.
Rescue crews continue their search, but heavy spring rains, high water levels, and cold temperatures don't help. Finally, 13 days after the accident, Jesse Haugen's body is recovered west of Curtin Falls on the Canadian border. 3 days after that, crews are able to find the body of Reese Grahams. It's directly under Curtin Falls in about 30 feet of water. The cause of death for both guys is drowning. For Eric and his family, it's relief.
It was just to the point where we, as a family, needed closure.
In the following weeks, Eric replays the accident over and over again in his mind. He even prays to God, asking for one more shot.
Put me back in that canoe right as it happens. Let me try one more time, you know. Let me give it another try. Just let's try one more time.
He doesn't know everything he'd do differently, but one thing he'd do is wear life jackets. Even with all the what-ifs and second chances he wishes he had, Eric isn't blaming anyone for the tragedy at Curtin Falls, including Kyle Sellers, who was in the canoe that drifted too close to the waterfall. After Kyle got out of the hospital, Eric made a point to go see him.
This isn't your fault, you know, and I just wanted to make sure that he knew that this isn't something that I'm going to hold against him or be upset about long term. I'm very grateful he's alive, and I'm not going to hang on to any negatives out of it, and it doesn't really matter how it happened. It's not healthy to think that way.
When Reese Grahams died, he left behind a wife and two young boys, and they had an annual camping trip planned for the Boundary Waters later that summer. So as Eric healed from his injuries, he was determined to help make that trip still happen.
I'm trying to put myself in somebody's shoes who went through what you did, and like, I might not want to go back right away, but you're going back tomorrow. Why is that? Do you have any conflicting emotions about going back to the Boundary Waters after this happened?
I have had some thoughts where it's like, well, maybe this is stupid. Maybe I shouldn't go back up there, you know. Maybe I should do something different in life. And maybe it, you know, the more you bring up the story and talk about it, maybe it's just bringing up these emotions again, which I'm starting to maybe recover from.
But Eric says that's him just questioning himself.
It's really important to keep Reese's memory alive and Jesse's alive. And going back up there was really important to everyone and really important to my nephews, to not take away the opportunity for them to experience what the Boundary Waters is like and what the outdoors is. And I think with nature, you know, you have to have that respect for it, because there is an element of danger to it. And I think to avoid it, though, would be more detrimental than to get back on the horse and to get back at it.
So just 3 months after the accident, Eric Grahams once again loads up his truck with camping gear and drives north to the Boundary Waters.
The most difficult emotional part of the experience was the drive on the way up and then the drive on the way home. We just have so many memories driving up together, and it's just the sadness of that.
He drove past Duluth, where he and Reese both ran a marathon. Then outside Two Harbors, past the place where Reese got married, and Eric gave the best man speech.
So I was by myself too, so it was okay for me to grieve without anyone seeing me.
The trip went off without a hitch. It was at a spot Eric hadn't been to before. He busied himself doing everything Reese would have, setting up camp, helping the boys fish.
And the kids were having such a good time. They were swimming and enjoying themselves. And it was in August. The waters are warm. It's safe.
As for Curtin Falls, Eric's got one more trip planned there, but it's not a fishing trip. Instead, he's taking a bunch of friends and family members back to the spot on the anniversary of the accident to remember the guys who passed away.
I think that is part of the closure process. And I think it's important for family members to have the opportunity.
Eric says after that trip, he'll focus on new areas he wants to explore in the Boundary Waters.
I think avoiding it would be harder. I think giving up that would almost make me want to give up other things in life than to, like, give up the business then.
The business he owned with his brother Reese.
I mean, and then where do you stop? Like, you know, I can't crawl in a hole because this happened, that, you know, I still have a family and life and nephews, and I still have a huge future ahead of me, and I know that Reese would want me to continue on doing the things that we loved, and I don't think it would be very honorable for me to just disappear.
So Eric will keep coming back to the Boundary Waters. It's still his favorite place in the world. That episode was produced by me, Dan Wanshura. It was edited by Morgan Springer, with additional editing by Peter Payette, Ellie Katz, and Michael Livingston. Sound design and mixing by Matthew Mickelson. Music from Blue Dot Sessions. If you enjoy this podcast, don't forget to join the Points North Fan Club. For just $5 a month, you can support Great Lakes storytelling and get the brand new Points North beanie. Trust me, you're going to want this thing. It's frickin' sharp. Join the club at pointsnorthpodcast.org/fanclub. That's pointsnorthpodcast.org/fanclub. And thanks. Points North is a production of Interlochen Public Radio.
Points North is brought to you in part by Cherry Republic, celebrating Northern Michigan's tart cherries with products like jams, barbecue sauces, chocolate-covered cherries, and more. Online at cherryrepublic.com. And Aspire North Realtors, bringing real estate professionals together, supporting their involvement in the community, and advocating for the industry in a sustainable way. Online at aspirenorthrealtors.com.